Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the news today of the death of George McGovern and speak with Richard Parker, who was a political advisor to the former Democratic presidential nominee who in 1972 lost to Richard Nixon. We will discuss McGovern's life and legacy and whether a candidate of the left like McGovern could be elected in today's right-wing political and media environment. Then we'll look at the polls that are all over the place and talk with someone who has accurately predicted the winner of all of the past presidential elections since 1984. The distinguished professor of history at American University, Alan Lichtman, joins us to discuss why, in spite of Romney's surge in the polls, he feels Obama will still be re-elected to a second term. Then finally, following the deaths of American diplomats in Libya, a tragic incident that has been blown up into a presidential election issue, we will speak with Abubakar Saad, a former Libyan diplomat from Benghazi. We will discuss the chaos that has become a political football in a country that is essentially lawless, with groups of militias and tribes vying over regional control with little to no national army or police. Joining us now is Richard Parker, who teaches economics and public policy at Harvard Kennedy School of Government and is a senior fellow at the Shorenstein Center. He is the former managing editor of Ramparts and was a co-founder of Mother Jones magazine and serves on the editorial board of The Nation. His books include The Myth of the Middle Class and John Kenneth Galbraith, His Life, His Politics, His Economics. He was a political advisor to George McGovern, who passed away today. Welcome to Background Briefing, Richard Parker.
Good to be with you, Ian, as always.
And I take it that this is a sad day for you. You lost not only somebody that you worked for, but somebody that was a friend.
Yeah, and, you know, it was more than that. Even it was that a way of life or a kind of American is passing out of American politics. McGovern was a Midwestern Democrat who had grown up as a Republican at a time when there was a branch of progressive Republicans that were more politically to the left than the dominant sector in the Democratic Party today. They were deeply alarmed by the rise of large corporations. They were struggling to hold on to what they thought of as the values which people like them had fought for in the Civil War. They'd been very influenced by Teddy Roosevelt and also had become respectful of Woodrow Wilson. And in George McGovern's case, were already moving toward Franklin Roosevelt by the Great Depression because they saw Roosevelt, oddly enough, representing the ethical values of what they thought their Republican Party had represented when Lincoln was its head. So that's a kind of landscape of American politics that I think is probably unknown to most of your younger listeners, but is an important part of American history that dominated American history from the 1850s up through the 1970s, and it's going away.
So why did this decorated World War II bomber pilot lose so badly during the very unpopular Vietnam War against Richard Nixon, who cynically suggested he was going to end the war, but in fact prosecuted it for a number of years and, of course, eventually left the White House in disgrace over Watergate. I have never understood why it is the American public rejected a man on the basis that he was attacked for being soft on American national security, soft on communism, right, which, of course, was the great canard during the Cold War, right, and yet had all the authenticity of a true American hero.
Well, I think, you know, you ask a terrific question, and I think it goes to this sense in which McGovern was part of a heritage that was exploding and dying, if you will, all around us in 1968 and 1972. I think that the reason that he lost so badly, and it was like, I don't know, I think he had 38% compared to Nixon's 60% of the vote in 1972, which was, you know, Nixon would rank up there with Franklin Roosevelt and others as, you know, a landslide victory. I mean, poor George McGovern carried just Massachusetts, where I'm sitting today, plus the District of Columbia, Nixon won 49 other states. I think the reason was that the coalition that Franklin Roosevelt had built of ethnic and often Catholic blue-collar workers north of the Mason-Dixon line, plus white Southerners, because black Southerners were still barely beginning to vote, having been denied the vote after the Civil War. That coalition was falling apart by the late 1960s. And as it fell apart, many of its members turned angrily against the Democratic Party. So in a sense, it was a protest vote against the change in the Democratic National Presidential Party as much as it was a vote for Richard Nixon. You know, we hear today about how Richard Nixon had a Southern strategy, but I think in some sense he was like a surfer riding a wave rather than a surfer who created or bent the wave that he rode. It wasn't so much that the Southern strategy precipitated change. It was a strategy that was reacting to change that was manifestly taking place. What was going on? Since the mid-1950s, race had been brought back to the center of national American politics, and the regional clash that had gone from the 1820s up to 1860 and then precipitated secession and the Civil War had been reignited in the 1950s. We can talk about why in a minute. The second was that the war in Vietnam had started in some sense inadvertently as far as the American people were concerned. No one had had much explained to them why we were in Vietnam. And the one template that they had, or two templates that they had to deal with, which framed resolve about the war, was one, America's crushing victory in the Second World War over fascism, and two, the structure of the anti-communist, anti-Moscow, anti-Beijing global political frame that had been adopted after the Second World War. So we had been taught by by Franklin Roosevelt himself the principle of unconditional surrender in the case of the Second World War. No compromise with the enemy, no negotiated settlements. And then second, we had been taught by the experience of anti-communism over a 50-year, 60-year, 70-year period, plus the specifics of Korea, where a compromise solution had been imposed, that somehow to, as the supporters of the war used to say in the 1960s, to cut and run in Vietnam was not just a disgrace, but a strategic error of the most egregious kind that would lead only to more war. So those were two factors, race and Vietnam. And then the third was everything associated with the youth movements and the counterculture and the student rebellions and the life, whatever we want to call them, the lifestyle changes, feminism, gay rights, environmentalism. This was one after another of bowling pins of American culture being knocked over by the claims of American youth, by and large, saying the rights that make you a citizen of the United States have not been equally extended to all, and they are now going to be. And for lots and lots of people, that kind of change was very frightening. And so George McGovern was an adult among the youth who was actually willing to side with the direction in which they were going. In fact, willing to stand up and lead in the direction in which they were going because of his vision of the country coming out of having been perversely raised a prairie Republican back at the time of the First World War.
Well, Richard Parker, professor of economics and public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and a senior fellow at the Shorenstein Center, and he worked as a political advisor to George McGovern. When McGovern was defeated, concurrently, the sort of infamous meeting took place between the later to be Justice of the Supreme Court and his neighbor, the head of the American Chamber of Commerce, where the Lewis Powell memo was formed in response to the student rebellions against the Vietnam War. And in many ways, that became a blueprint for the right-wing takeover of our politics, particularly the corporate takeover of our politics. So in many ways, it seems to me that the reaction against the Vietnam War was much more powerful and enduring than the great movement that had taken place that, in fact, McGovern wasn't able to ride in on. And you had this vast anti-war movement at the minute that Nixon finally ended that war or wound it down. They went away. They weren't a continuing political factor. So I just get this strong impression that nobody like McGovern would ever be elected in this political environment anymore because the country's moved so far to the right. And indeed, many people have said that Ronald Reagan wouldn't even get the nomination on the Republican in the Republican
Party. That's very possible. I mean, again, you're speaking to the changing geography and demographics of the United States, and the way I try to portray it to my students is you have to think about region, you have to think about race, and you have to think about religion. That the period George McGovern grew up in was what we call the wave two migration of Europeans and Irish coming to what had been before that basically a British Isles and African culture. That is, the first wave of settlement, the colonial period in the 17th and 18th century, meant that the overwhelming majority of the white population in the 13 colonies and for the first 40 years thereafter originated as English speakers from England, Scotland, and Wales, and to a lesser extent among Scots-Irish in Scotland and Ireland. The second wave of migration starts when the Irish and then the Germans, followed by the Poles and the Russians and the Italians and a whole surge coming out of continental Europe, began entering the United States in the 1830s. And that second wave population coincides with industrialization and urbanization and utterly transforms the original founders'. I don't know if you want to call it dream, I don't know if you want to call it flawed vision, but was which had been of an agrarian rural democracy with a centralized state of limited power because there were no corporations in America in 1800. By 1900, the dominant economic factor in America was not the small farmer, the small shopkeeper, the small businessman, it was the giant corporation. You have to remember that when George McGovern wrote his doctoral thesis in history at Northwestern, he wrote it on the Rockefeller mines in Colorado and the famous coal strikes that had occurred there, which had for a time been one of the, young people don't know about it today, but for 50 years from 1910 until 1960, those were legendary strikes in the history of American labor and American labor organizing against the concentrated power of interests like the Rockefellers and the Morgans. And so, you know, McGovern had done all of his doctoral research on that coal strike, and so he was intimately acquainted with that progressive labor-based history and deeply identified with it. The second was that his thesis advisor had been Arthur Link, who was probably for many, many years the most famous biographer of Woodrow Wilson. And so McGovern also had a Wilsonian, Franklin Rooseveltian internationalism to him that meant that he took on the idea of America being a global power that many Midwestern Democrats and Republicans had resisted right up to the Second World War. And in fact, many Republicans early on after the Second World War were still resisting. So McGovern represented that whole wave one of migration, the Protestants, the Scots, the Methodists, the plain small farmers. His father, in fact, had been a Methodist minister who never earned more than $100 a month. And so George McGovern knew life as a small town boy in rural South Dakota, raised with a strong sense of values, who was taught by his Methodist parents that this idea of being the promised land and of having a moral responsibility not only to make the chosen people work as a kind of justice, but that it was to work not in a pietistic after you're dead, but in a social gospel here on earth. And so he was driven always by the deepest of moral and familial values, which is what made him so striking in the time after Richard Nixon, where cynicism and manipulation once again took hold of American politics as it had in the late 19th century.
Well, but we're on the cusp, Richard Parker, of a possible election of a representative of the 1%, the final victory of the oligarchy over the democracy. I mean, in many ways, McGovern must have been, in the last months here, feeling totally defeated, that the corporate power that he identified against, remember the 47%? He right. represented the 47%.
My father was an Episcopal minister, and my mother was raised in South Dakota, and her best friend as a child back in the 1920s was the daughter of the last previous Democratic senator elected from South Dakota before McGovern. And so one of the many conversations I had with him was about those kinds of value systems that preachers' kids grow up with. McGovern was not defeated in any real sense in the last 6 months of his life. This is a fight that carries on all your life, and this is a fight that carries on after your life, and your job is to fight the best fight you can and to pass the willingness to fight down to a new generation. I don't think he was so much shocked by the asserted power of the 1%. What took him aback was the quietude of so many middle-class and working-class Americans. As I say, he came from a morally constructed vision of America that was then infused with a deep sense of the justice of labor struggles and, thought that the backbone of America were the small farmers, small business people, and workers of the country who could, because they had, in some sense, risen up at the beginning of the 20th century and clawed back, to some extent, real power. Now, had it been permanent? No, they seem to have lost it in the 1920s, but then the madness of the 1929 crash precipitated the Great Depression, out of which then came a whole new era of democratic big D and small d governance under Roosevelt. And it was, in that tradition that McGovern was then elected after the Second World War, and it was that tradition in which he served in the House and in the Senate in the 1950s and 60s.
Well, just in closing, Richard Parker, I remember interviewing George McGovern, and he told this amazing story of his World War II experiences as a bomber pilot, returning from a mission over Austria. He was based in Italy, and the plane had been shot up, and they were flying back, and the bombs were still stuck in the bomb bay, and they couldn't get the bomb out because they can't land with a bomb, and it's likely to go off. So they eventually were banging on this bomb to try and get it loose, and eventually they managed to get it loose, and McGovern watched it fall, and it fell right onto a farmhouse in northern Italy. And he, being growing up on a farm, knew that it was midday, and the whole family, the farmer's family, would be sitting around having their midday meal. So he was absolutely stricken by this memory of this of dropping this bomb on this farmhouse for many decades. And then apparently he told the story on Austrian television, and sure enough, the farmer got in touch with him, who was still alive, and all his family was still alive, and they said, don't feel guilty anymore. We escaped. We saw the plane in trouble, and we saw the bomb come down, and we got the hell out of there. So this is the man that somehow was not patriotic enough to become president of the United States. Go figure.
I think that was what was so deep. I worked in that campaign, and I also worked in his last political campaign in 1980 for the Senate. And I think that if there was just a hint of bitterness, it was the accusation that Nixon and the Republicans had leveled against him of lack of patriotism. For a guy who had been a bomber pilot and done, dozens of missions, including that one, and had won a Distinguished Flying Cross and a Bronze Star and everything else, the idea that Nixon, who had been a supply officer in the Navy and had never seen actual combat, could accuse him, McGovern, of being a coward not a patriot, stuck in his craw in a really deep way that other accusations didn't. I think that's actually quite right. And I think it's also really important to remember, because so much of the new left was willing to reject an idea of patriotism as part of its rejection of what it saw as American imperialism in Vietnam, that patriotism actually has a place in the left's iconography. And it may be that thinking about what George McGovern and his generation did, and also how George McGovern cared for the fate of that Italian farm family, should be the way we think of patriotism, particularly in times of war. I wish there was some evidence that we could feel that way as we're dropping those drone-carried bombs across Afghanistan and once across Iraq and so many parts of the rest of the world today.
Well, Richard Parker, I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Richard Parker, who teaches economics and public policy at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and he's also a senior fellow at the Shorenstein Center. He is a former managing editor of Ramparts and was co-founder of Mother Jones magazine and served on the editorial board of The Nation. His books include The Myth of the Middle Class and John Kenneth Galbraith, His Life, His Politics, His Economics. He was a political advisor to George McGovern, who passed away today. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with somebody who believes that in spite of Romney's surge in the polls, Obama will win.
He summoned all of his strength in a climb. It suffered all of his strength in a fall. Sometimes when he got into fighting, man, he could fight with you all day long. Good man, and now he's gone.